Call to order the first monthly regular meeting of Port of Port Townsend for Wednesday, October 14th. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so the agenda. I think we have some corrections to the agenda today.
Actually, I'm going to leave it.
You're going to leave it? You got a hold of him? Oh, okay, great. Are there any other corrections or additions to the agenda?
I'd like to ask for executive session with legal counsel for personnel matters.
Okay.
How long?
How long, Pat?
15 minutes.
And no action?
No.
Okay. Any other additions or corrections? Okay, then I move that we approve the corrected agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments not related to the agenda. Okay. Then we'll go to the second reading, action items, the boat ramp.
So this is a agenda item that boat ramp contracts approved and moving forward. This is the section we're buying floats to service that boat ramp. There's stock floats from Topper Industries. We actually bid this out, and Topper Industries was a little bitter with the design criteria we asked for. Everything was great. We went through Fish and Wildlife, they permitted them, Corps of Engineers permitted them, the city permitted them. And yesterday afternoon, I got an email from another state agency. I didn't even know there was a state agency, but it's the Agency of Accessibility. And they basically said that these docks have to be handicap accessible. And I kind of said, the city and I had that discussion, and the left side of the ramp is fully handicap accessible, the 80-foot gangway and 8-foot floats. They cited chapter and verse of why they need to be accessible. But what was interesting is the email I got, I want to read this to you because I just still can't believe it. It says, "Don't let Washington State Fish and Wildlife permit people tell you, or DNR aquatic folks, or the Army Corps of Engineers, that their rules trump ADA rules," because they don't. But just an interesting statement from the state agency. Anyway, I freaked out yesterday. Finally got the contractor who was out of town on vacation, was able to call me 15 minutes ago. The change to the contract that's in your packet to make this switch is $2,100. So we can do it this time, we can wait 2 weeks. We're not under the gun for these, we don't really have to have these until December anyway. But the difference is, it's interesting, Fish and Wildlife want us to provide a decking that's all fiberglass so that the light goes through the docks and provides light to the fish. So we did that, they agreed with that. That involves a 1.5-inch square, you see the plastic decking is 1.5-inch square. The ADA folks say it has to be under a 1/2 inch. So a cane doesn't get stuck in it or something like that. So even though I explained to them that this ramp will not be handicapped accessible by a wheelchair, because there's no gangway, they said, didn't matter. Anyway, we got it all solved. If you all want to approve a contract for $34,970 instead of $32,870.
Well, isn't that smaller hole size going to then go in the face of the light getting through it from the fishing?
No, they said that because it's the way it's made, they said they can still achieve 65% light transmission. It's just a more expensive product.
Huh.
Is this, I mean, you're talking about a dock that's 8 feet wide now?
6 feet wide. 6 feet wide, 7 feet long.
And that sits right in the middle of the ramp?
No, it's going to sit on this side of the ramp.
I thought we were going to put it between the two ramps.
We were at first, but we had some construction issues, and it was recommended we move it to this side, to the southern side, which is actually beneficial because we'll now have a ramp that's 36 feet wide clear span. So if we want to launch catamarans or something like that, we'll be able to do that. This is actually a better design.
What about piling to secure this float?
The piling's in the Neptune contract.
Okay.
This is just, they're going to float them in their stock, put the piles in. And the way these are designed, we can bolt the pile loops to it after. So piles can begin, spec, sized, just put it up and bolt them to it. Like I said, there's no rush, but I just wanted you to be aware. I was going to pull it off until we got it all settled, but it seems like $2,000 will fix it.
So do we need to think about $2,000, or should we?
I'm giving it.
Okay, so I move that we accept the quote from Copper Industries.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Done.
If I could give you just a financial overview, because I know a lot of people are worried about this. The Neptune bid was $413.50. These new docks are $34,970. Comes to $448,470, plus tax is $488,832. So we're still under our $500,000 budget, not by much. But I just wanted to keep you on track where we are in this project.
Great. Okay, next up, 2016 budget.
So you'll have your package of the second draft. The operating budget assumptions in there for that draft. So basically just fine-tuned it a little bit more. And we went over it this morning in the workshop. Do you have any questions at this point, or?
Well, I have one observation is how the port employee rate increases are proposed to be implemented. I have some problems with that, some concerns that, just for the record, that's what I'd want to talk about in executive session this afternoon. So that's, I just wanted to say that for the record.
Okay.
So then nothing more for this meeting then, other than what we discussed this morning, I assume? Ron?
I'm sorry, I should have, you know, when you had the opportunity for comments, I missed out, I was reading something. That was a great session this morning, going through the budgets and everything. I was really impressed with all the things that are being considered and everything. One more thing that I forgot to mention this morning, I wish I had, is you have that salary survey that is going to be implemented next year and be in three phases. It has nothing to do with the union contract, but involves the salary survey. And I was just wondering whether, you know, to make sure that we have a profit for this year, excuse me, for 2016, whether we could consider postponing the implementation of the salary survey until 2017. So those employees, salaried employees, that were going to get increases according to the salary survey for next year that were in this budget, if we postponed it 1 year, they would not get salary increases. I know that's a big sacrifice, but in order to make sure that we have a profit and we're cash flow positive, maybe that's something that should be looked into.
So that would be an across the board deal with the survey?
Well, I think what he's suggesting, if correct me if I'm wrong, is just postponing the implementation until next year, right?
Exactly, until 2017.
Right.
And that would be 55? Is that what we're talking about? We were going to do a third?
Yeah, about 55,000.
So that's $50,000 less in cost, and then you're talking about raising revenue a little bit more. That's getting us into the ballpark with where we want to be for 2016.
Does that affect benefits too? If we don't increase?
Yeah, because the benefits are based on the FICA, Medicare, and the PERS.
So it'd be more than 55.
Yes, it'd be more than 55.
Of 55. Like 70.
Bill?
So is that a proposal to collapse the 2 years into next year, or just move the whole schedule on it? Or what would that, what would your, I don't get the feeling that
I meant move
whole schedule out. It's a three-year implementation.
Right.
So start in 2017.
He wouldn't make it, he wouldn't make, just moves that 2 years up and make all that. I don't get the impression that the work staff is overpaid. I don't know whether this is necessarily the right way to go about balancing books, if that's what we're about.
John?
As a comment to that proposal, if I don't have any idea what court employees are doing, if they're watching the budget process or not, but it could end up actually adding to a loss of service.
To a what?
Loss of service. If court employees are expecting raises and don't get them this year, they decide to move on, we could be in that situation of loss of service.
Perhaps what we could do is for the next meeting, we have some rate adjustments to make, so we could make those adjustments and then see what our number is at the end, to see what our, you know, how much air we have under our wings, and see if what, how that $50,000 would then affect it, or whatever that, we should probably figure out what that number is, because if it's just the salary survey, it could that be that plus benefits, and see if it's actually something that is needed after the rate adjustments that have been factored in. So we can have that for the next meeting.
I mean, it's certainly a way to, you know, try and meet in the middle if we're talking about raising rates. And thank you.
Were there any other comments?
Any other comments? Okay. Then we'll go to the first reading, the Army Building Fire Suppression System bid results.
So we, not knowing what we didn't know, I guess I should back up. We're all aware that the fire department did a surprise inspection on the sale of the building and determined that the building's uses were incompatible with each other. And in order to remedy that, the building would need to be sprinkled. We literally have no buildings in the port that are sprinkled. So this was all new to us. We had our engineer do an engineer's estimate of what that would cost. Keep in mind, we've already spent over $150,000 on the armory building, just to keep it up the way it is.
Mm-hmm. You mean this last year?
Last 2 years.
In the last 2 years?
So we have new roof, paint, and all the new electrical. So the next shoe drops is sprinkler systems, which are extremely expensive. So not knowing, we went out to bid to see what it was going to cost us to sprinkle that. We had a mandatory pre-bid meeting, so all the contractors needed to show up. Three contractors showed up, and we had bids that ranged from $162,000 to $81,000. Now, I should caution you, that's just for the sprinkler system. That's not for all the controls and the alarms and everything else that has to go with that. So you could add another $10,000 to that just for the valves and the alarms. In addition to that, the sail loft needs a emergency egress. It can't be the ladder that's on the side of the building like it is now. It has to be a full design ladder, which our maintenance people can do, but they estimate it'll be close to $40,000. So in our capital facilities program for next year, we've allocated $150,000 for repairs on the sail off work. The city has been very good to us, working with us and not red tagging the building. They could come in and red tag the building and tell everybody to leave. They're not, as long as we keep moving in the right direction. That's one of the reasons we wanted to bid and be proactive. So Night Fire Protection was a low bidder, $81,000. They're a very reputable company out of Kitsap. And I think Harold and I would recommend we go with Night when we're ready to pull that trigger.
Do what?
We would go with Night Fire Protection. Uh-huh. They're the company we would go with to do that, $81,000.
but now you just said that it's going to be more than 81. That's just.
Say 91 probably by the time we get all this solenoids and bells on. Mm-hmm. And then maintenance is already scheduled to do the stairway. Richard Berg is drawing the plans for it. It's in permitting for the city. So that will be done as soon as the city approves those plans.
Is this a metal?
Yeah, it's wood. Because it's in the historic district on a pseudo-historic building, it has to blend into the environment, so it has to be.
Would it be cheaper to do metal?
Wouldn't the wood steps be the first to burn up in a fire?
Yeah, I mean, that's, come on, you guys.
So that's a battle we could fight, I guess, with the HPC. But
every building in the city have metal fire escapes?
Yeah, that's just too bizarre.
Come on. Now, what makes HPC an expert in safety? I mean, couldn't you argue with HPC?
We could argue.
It's like ADA. I mean,
we're not quite there yet, but you're right. That is an argument we can have for a day. I'm just kind of framing the whole thing. We don't have a budget for this. We're putting it in a capital facilities program as a high priority. This is actually higher than a high priority. This is something we have to do. I should add, and I hate to do this in public, but everybody should be aware, the reason for this is the woodworking shop downstairs. If Steve Chapin was not downstairs, we would not need to sprinkle that building. So the regulations are any wood shop over 2,500 square feet has to be sprinkled. So because he's almost 9,000 feet, that doesn't fit.
Well, the wood stove at the neighbor's place.
The wood stove has to go, the fire department's already said that. So that's going to be, that's not even a question. So this is kind of where we're at. I just wanted to update you. There's no action required. We're not ready to say we want a contract with Knight, but at least we know what it's going to cost to solve these issues for the city.
Well, you know, there was some thought that we're having some empty buildings here now with Admiral moving out. We're going to have some people moving around, or not Admiral, but Gold Star moving out. There's places that Steve could move his shop that wouldn't require sprinkling. And I mean, $100,000, you know, $91,000, that's a lot of money just for a location. I mean, there's other things that we could do with that that wouldn't necessarily be a boat shop that would require that building to be sprinkled, right?
Yes. So those are discussions, policy discussions we have to talk about. I will be meeting probably next week or week after with the tenants individually to talk about issues and talks and where we can move from here. That's it for that.
Any other discussion on the fire system bid results? Okay. Then we'll go to potential immediate action items. This is going to require commission approval. Do we need to accept the boatyard retrofit project this week?
Mm-hmm.
We do?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we need, on the Quilson wastewater feasibility study? Yeah, okay. So then I guess we should ask the commissioners, do you feel like we should go ahead and have a unanimous decision on accepting these today?
I move that we should.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, off we go. Let's go to A. Let's go to A, the stormwater retrofit project.
That's it?
No, the stormwater.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you were accepting it. So, okay, I got you. Sorry. I lost my place.
Lots of papers.
So, yeah, basically this is so that we can release the retainage for this project. The project's been done for several months. And I didn't know there was retainage waiting. But then after we got the approval for AWAS within, 24 hours when I sent in the notice of completion, it was the next week. This project, which was months old, so that's what brought my attention. So basically, if the project's already done, we have all the required documents from LNI and the DOR, and so we're just asking permission if we can.
And this is for the new sand filters, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is working, and they did a good job.
And everyone signed off, and there's no concerns. Okay.
I move we accept the Boatyard Stormwater Retrofit Project.
One second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next, potential immediate action item on the Quilisi wastewater feasibility study.
So if you remember, a lot of you, none of you were here, October 2012, we actually submitted an application.
No, actually, I was here. Yeah.
Submitted an application to the county to use public infrastructure funds. You all know public infrastructure funds, it's the .08 money that we get back to the county for economic development. It ranked very high on the list of all the elected officials that are on that committee. And it just kind of languished there for 4 years. We had assumed the county was going to do it, and if it wasn't for Linda Herzog bringing it to the county's attention that this, something needs to happen, I probably wouldn't have. So I know that a couple of you commissioners were involved in talking to county commissioners and other meetings that were had. It was determined, if you remember, Larry Crockett said a few months ago that we really shouldn't be doing this, we can't do this. We did a lot of investigating and we actually can do this project. We can't run the wastewater treatment plant, he was right at that. We can do the feasibility study to make that happen. So Jim Parker has said that if this comes to be, they can run the system. So after a meeting with the county officials, and I believe Pete, you were in that meeting?
Yeah.
And Larry Crockett, Larry offered our services to help them with the caveat that it's gonna fall on my plate to do this. My time will be paid for by the county's grant. So it's no cost to the port, the county will be paying or reimbursing us for my time. And it's to basically bid out to an engineering firm to do a feasibility study for a wastewater treatment. I attached to the agenda some of Linda's talking points for that project so you can better understand what it is. And I don't know if Linda wants to say anything about this. Just so you all know, it's I estimate it's gonna take 20 hours of my time. So that's about all the time.
And not in 1 week. Spread out.
Oh, no, it's spread out.
So, Lynn, why don't you talk a little bit about what it is? Because it's really not a wastewater treatment plant.
Right. It's not treatment as far as we know. There are growth management restrictions on what kind of wastewater management system you can have in a rural village center or anywhere outside of an urban growth area. And that's actually part of the problem. We in Quilisi don't have the engineering expertise to know exactly what kind of wastewater management system belongs in a rural village center and specifically in Quilisi. So the idea 4.5 years ago now was that we need to find an engineering firm to do the analysis of the area, including soils, and to let us know what kind of system works best. And the technology has been racing forward over the past 10 years, and there are lots of things that none of us have ever heard of or seen or touched, but engineering firms should be up to date enough with the technology to be able to fit a technology of some sort to the environment closing. The whole point being that there are, I got a new count yesterday from the assessor, Jeff, that there are 92 commercially zoned properties in the rural village center in Quilisi. My own judgment is that only about a quarter of them have adequate wastewater management and can function in a business capacity. The others simply can't do anything on their properties until we have a way to manage the wastewater. And often I use the terminology flush a toilet downtown. It really is kind of a third world environment because we don't have adequate modern infrastructure. So this project is not to build anything. It's to assess the environment, figure out what the technology should be, where all the parts and pieces of that technology would lie, and to estimate the cost of installing it and the cost of hooking up to it for a typical business person who owns commercial property downtown. It's pretty straightforward. It's not always done. The feasibility study and a preliminary design is done before a project is actually installed. Ultimately, it has to be designed, of course, but this is a step that's separate and prior to most of these public projects. And the reason for that is I believe that the U.S. Department of Agriculture can offer funding, either a low-interest loan or a grant, a partial grant, to install such a system, but unless we can actually show them a picture of what we need, we're not going to even compete well with USDA. So that's the point, and I'm enormously gratified that one of our five public agencies that serves Spokane is willing to step forward and get an engineer on to do the feasibility analysis and let us move forward with the system.
David?
Thank you. David Sullivan, County Commissioner, and thought I'd provide you with copies of your original application for the project here to the Public Infrastructure Board. And reassure you that the money's still there.
Great. Thanks.
We rarely support projects that don't support projects that we fund. And this is funding through the Public Infrastructure Fund, which is set aside, like you said, for counties by the state, and has to be spent on economic development infrastructure with consultation with cities and ports. And consultation can be all the way from very little to an extensive process that we created, including the PUD and some three citizens, one from each sector of the county, to review these projects and to review the spending of this money and to allocate it. And that money's been allocated. We're certainly in support of you doing this project as was envisioned from the very beginning. It's always been envisioned that the port would cooperate with the PUD because they are the main purveyors of utility systems. And I would anticipate that they would even might run it someday. They have a water system there, and that was helped pay for by the Public Infrastructure Fund. And it would be real compatible to have a sewer or large on-site septic or some variation in combination with the water system for billing and lots of other services. So really appreciate you guys stepping forward, because we have trouble with project management right now, having enough staff that can do all the projects we have. So it's really great, Jim, if you could step forward and do this.
Well, David, I just wanted to say, being in that meeting, thank you. We really appreciated what was going on in that meeting. Everybody was pretty frank, you know, and we looked at what Quilicene is as a layer, the acronym there, and it really is a gray area, and it's a bit spooky, because as a community you drive through there and it's becoming a ghost town. And so it's neat to see that two groups can get together and possibly do something. And you know, one of the things that was mentioned is a second water source at the north end of town, that the county is considering that, and that would, the timing on this works really well. So there are a lot of, seems like a lot of stars that are aligning a bit. To
I think there are, and there, even in Olympia, I was in a State Association of Counties regional meeting last week with a number of our legislators, and they're starting to look at growth management and starting to really understand the issues we have around waste treatment in these small little areas within rural counties. Mm-hmm. Looking for ways to address that, so I'm a little more optimistic, although when I look for capital funding from them, I'm still not optimistic. Yeah. But we're with you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So is the reason that the county's not taking the lead on this feasibility study is that they don't have the resources?
Yeah. You want to address that?
What's that?
I was just asking the reason why the county's not taking the lead on performing this feasibility study. Is it because you just don't have the resources to do it?
That's true. We don't have the project management to do it. We have been trying to recruit an engineer for this whole year. We had one person that was applying for the job and turned it down earlier this year. We're still looking. And so it is a challenge for us to add new things to our plate. So if we were to do it, it would be a matter of waiting.
Wilson's been waiting a long time. So I appreciate, again, you having the capacity to do this. I just want to add one small thing. Seems small, but sometimes gets big. Any reference to this as a sewer system is a kiss of death. So if we can call it a waste
Okay, so.
I'd make a move that we move on this, accept this.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Okie dokie. That's it. We're due staff comments now. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Two? Pat?
Yes.
Pat, staff comments?
None.
None? Eric?
Very briefly, we're hoping to get at least an initial staff draft of the capital facilities plan to you within the next month or so, in early November, hopefully. It will be, I emphasize, a staff draft, so we fully expect that there might be a lot of input and substantial revisions to what we've prepared. The engineer, Harold Anderson, has completed his Fort Wyatt facility condition assessment, although the write-up of that is not entirely complete. We've identified, I think, on the order of 40 projects that are necessary simply to maintain the state of good repair. That's really what our focus is here. It's not on new capital projects. It's on ensuring that what we have is still serviceable and that we maintain our assets. So Jim has alluded to the only red tag project that we've identified, and that's some good news. That among those 40 projects, only one of those is in a situation that would potentially involve jeopardizing tenancies. The rest of them are nevertheless near-term projects, kind of a little bit more than duct tape and baling wire fixes that are kind of the stock and trade of ordinary and routine maintenance conducted by Larry Ozzie and his crew. And instead, these are expenditures that would be $25,000 or more in cost, and would extend the useful life of these facilities by 10 years or more. So that's what we've identified. The numbers are daunting, I'll just forewarn you. And that obviously relates to the discussion about budget that we had in the workshop this morning. We fully expect that there will be a significant funding gap, and we'll have difficult choices to make and what projects to prioritize. So look forward to that, and I look forward to spirited discussions and working with you on finalizing that.
Spirited, thank you.
The other thing I have, I've been working on the boat ramp, as we said earlier. Mobilization is the 3rd of November, Monday the 3rd. We're planning to have it done by Christmas, but we know how weather goes, so if we have good weather, it'll be done by Christmas. If we don't, it might be a little longer. We are putting signs up next week to let people know that the ramp will be closed. The contractor has been alerted that if we can open it without any additional costs or inconvenience, we will at certain times. And we're also, maintenance is doing a program on trying to keep Havelock ramp a little clean. With winter crabbing, I've heard a lot of people that aren't very happy that they're not going to be able to get in either here or Fort Warden. So we're going to try to keep Havelock accessible. That's all I have.
Thank you. Public comments. Public comments. Okay. All right. Commissioner comments.
Great discussion this morning in the workshop. And, a lot of emails flying around about different issues. And I would just encourage everyone that, the workshop is a great place to air the laundry, and it certainly keeps the rumor mill down, and it certainly lets everyone know where everyone else is at. So if you can make workshops, it's great, because that's a great forum to use for discussing issues. And the other one is just thinking about ramps. What about Salmon Club? Is there any way Salmon Club would allow us to do something down there?
Actually, the Salmon Club ramp isn't actually the Salmon Club ramp. It's a city ramp. It's the end of Monroe Street. The Salmon Club has the parking lot. So I guess we could actually talk to Randy or whoever the Salmon Club is and see if we could get some, you know, an opportunity to park there. I didn't even think about that.
It just seems like we've worked hard with mm-hmm. the sport fishing lobby to get this ramp in and utilize it, that maybe there's a way we can
help. That might be a good idea, yeah. Red? Normally, this is the time that I would talk about the MRC stuff that we did, except this month's MRC meeting was a forum, so we're going to go in there. So I have no further comments. So the next meeting will be Wednesday, October the 28th at 5:30 in the evening in the Port Commission building. And so this meeting is recessed into an executive session.
15 minutes.
15 minutes.